Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Healthcare in Indian Country has had a long history of shortages, but according to journalist Mark Trahant, the context of that history is important in understanding what the Affordable Care Act means for Native American health programs. Mark Trahant is an independent journalist and former president of the Native American Journalists Association. He's currently serving as the Atwood Chair of Journalism at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and he's in Vermilion for this evening's 2013 Cash Lecture at USD. His talk is Money in the Cup, the Affordable Care Act, and American Indian Health Care. And Mr. Trahant, thanks so much for stopping by and joining us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And you just got off the plane?
Yes. The all-night flight from Anchorage.
Wow. Did you have time to sleep? Or
not yet.
Not yet. Well, so you'll have some time this afternoon before your talk?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act. And as I understand it, American Indian Health Care was a part of that legislation from the very beginning?
Right. There was a bill called the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which it was originally passed in 1975. And it's one of the most remarkable pieces of legislation in this country. It really worked. It helped just about every health statistic you can think of improve. And that bill then languished. It needed to be reauthorized. It sat around for almost 20 years. As health care reform came up, folks said, let's incorporate it. And so Indian Health Care Improvement Act is a chapter of the Affordable Care Act.
So how – I guess we still don't know exactly how this is all going to work, but how will the Affordable Care Act, the implementation of this, help and change health care in Indian country?
Well, the big thing is, for the first time in Indian health history, has just been so much determined by underfunding that it opens up avenues that could actually bring about full funding. And it does that in a variety of ways. One, expanding Medicaid access across the board, and some states even more so. It also opens up purchasing insurance through the exchange, which is going to be a new thing for Indian country. And it's also encouraging tribes to, as employers, to step up their insurance purchases.
Now, the issue of health insurance. Now, Native Americans are exempt from the individual mandate?
They are exempt because the idea is that the cornerstone of Indian health is that in nearly every treaty, there's an obligation outlined for health. The problem with that is the obligation's there, but the government's never funded it. So it's not been as good as it could be. This opens up, I mean, there's a real paradox. Why would you apply for insurance when you have this guarantee? Mm-hmm. And the flip side is, here are the resources that could actually make the system better.
So what are the advantages to signing up for the health insurance if you don't have to have it?
Well, there are big ones. For example, if you need medically necessary travel, right now the IHS can't pay for that, but an insurance policy could. And so it could help you get to places you need to go for dialysis or whatever other care. A big one would be to be able to take categories of patients. For example, you could take all of the diabetic patients at a particular clinic and insure them and have their costs then covered by the insurance pool rather than by the Indian health system.
Is this something that is the work to promote this or to sign people up on the reservation?
Yeah, the GAO says that they're doing a terrible job of promoting it. And really, there's two models. The first model that I like is the census. The census really got engaged with Indian country. It had fairs. It had posters everywhere. It got people excited about what you needed to do for the census, and it worked. The census numbers were not perfect, but they were much better. The second one is Native Vote. The last year they had a huge Native Vote campaign to register and get people signed up to vote, and I think it's that sort of campaign atmosphere you need to do with this law to get people in the education to say, here are the options, here's what you should be thinking about, and here's what you need to do.
Yeah. In general, for health insurance, do many Native Americans have health insurance?
No. Most Americans have insurance through work, and that's really the big difference, is only 36% of American Indians or Alaska Natives have insurance through work. So it's a huge disparity.
Now, you were talking a little bit about the Medicaid side of the Affordable Care Act. Now, how does that expanded coverage, how is that going to work, particularly when you have some states that aren't expanding Medicaid and other states are?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, the danger is it could create two health systems, one that has full funding through Medicaid, another that doesn't. You're going to have it right here with North Dakota being a laboratory example of what happens when you do expand. That's an open question. I think it's something that's got to be worked out. One kind of seed in the law that I think people will, from Indian country, will push if states don't expand is the idea of Indian country as a 51st state for Medicaid purposes. It's such an interesting marriage because Medicaid is a partnership between the federal government and the state government. And the state sets the rules. The feds pick up a certain percentage of it. But for American Indians and Alaskan Natives, the federal government picks up the entire tab. It's 100%. And so states setting the rules for money that is not going to benefit the state system, at some point it might be better just to take that all out of the state system and make it a direct 51st state.
You were just talking about trying to promote, efforts to promote getting health insurance, signing for the mandate on the reservations in Indian country. You know, as you talk about this, there's so many different sides. This is rather complex.
Extraordinarily complex. I couldn't imagine anything more complex.
And it sounds like it's more complex than for the rest of the country because you have all these different levels and treaties and history.
And Medicaid alone. I mean, you're talking about 50 different plans for how to do insurance.
Now, the history of shortages in healthcare, has that long been a part of, because you go back to 1955 with the American Indian Health Care Act?
Right. Well, in 1955, they created the Indian Health Service. But prior to that, it had been run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which was really awful at running health care. In fact, one doctor said, all we need are good doctors, facilities, and pharmaceuticals. I'm weary. And then he resigned.
And do you see that with the Affordable Care Act, even though, again, still not sure how it'll work out, that this will help with a lot of these problems with the funding shortages?
Sure. And I want to flip the funding shortage around because I think it's really important to note that the funding shortages have also created windows of excellence. And because of that, there are certain places in the country where folks have just been innovative. The United States spends so much more on healthcare than any other industrial country. And so learning ways to take that and to do it for less money makes sense. The Alaska Native Medical System is a great example. It runs at about the same level as the rest of the Indian health system, but the delivery of care is so extraordinarily better that I think most people would say, I want into that system.
So the shortage is creating new opportunities in an odd way.
It allows people to rethink things. For example, they knew in Alaska that they weren't going to continue to get increased revenue. So they started to saying, how could we redesign a system that's not based around revenue? And I think that's eventually where the healthcare system is going to go. That's much more about the patient long term, not fee for service, but how are you going to deliver better care.
Going back to the individual mandate with the difficulties on the website, the government website, are you aware of any sort of problems that that's creating in Indian country for getting people to sign up?
Well, they're actually even behind on that. Yeah. The way it works for the exemption for American Indians and Alaska Natives is they have to fill out a paper form, and the paper form is not ready yet. It's supposed to be ready next month, and then you'll actually start that process. Once you do it, it's a lifetime exemption because once you're an American Indian, you're probably not going to be changing.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Our guest is Mark Trehunt. He's an independent journalist and he's currently serving as the Atwood Chair of Journalism at the University of Alaska in Anchorage. And he's in Vermilion for this evening's 2013 Cash Lecture at USD. His talk is Money in the Cup, the Affordable Care Act, and American Indian Healthcare. Now, you've been, an independent journalist for a while now?
Right. I was the editor of the editorial page in Seattle, and it was actually how I got into healthcare. I was writing editorials about it and talking to people, and I'd ask about the Indian health system, and the very best people in the profession would give me blank stares. Mm-hmm. And so when the paper died, I wrote to Kaiser Family Foundation, and they gave me a fellowship to explore healthcare right at the beginning of reform.
So this is an issue that you've been covering for a while
right.
now. Is it difficult to, as an independent journalist, to make a living these days or to survive? I guess you have the position for a year anyway at the University of Alaska.
I found it's worked. And one of the things I'm really pleased is I've been able to stay independent and actually get two kids through college. I have a new film that just actually came out yesterday on the Affordable Care Act. And It's a webisode. I mean, the opportunity for journalists now is greater than ever before. If you have imagination, the tools are so accessible. And this film we shot on Canon, 35-millimeter cameras, but it's amazing the quality now.
And that's at visionmakermedia.org?
Right. It's there or at marktrahant.org.
Your own website.
Right.
Now, you're also – you have this interesting side gig that you kind of do as a Twitter poet.
Right.
And how did that come about?
That started at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, and it started when Twitter started, and just started doing it every day. And now it's a routine, and it's how I start my morning every single day.
Every single day you come up with a – because I know you had one a couple of days ago on the Affordable Care Act.
Right. I scan the headlines every morning and look for words that might fit and try to tell a story in 140 characters.
Is that a challenge?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's discipline, too. I like the discipline nature of it, where you have to be focused in how you can do it in that short a period.
So that discipline is just so you have these things and then that you have to do that and then that helps you with the rest of your work?
I think so. Yeah. It starts your day off thinking, this is what I do.
I was going to write down one of your Twitter poems down because I don't know if you can actually remember any off the top of your head or if you have some in your...
No, but I could get one real quick.
You got off Twitter.
Yeah. I'm terrible at memorizing them, and partly because I do them every day that they kind of fade very quick. But it's really easy to get them. Today's I wrote in the airport right when I landed at Minneapolis from Anchorage. Primary election, and the story that I was pacing it on is there's a story that the GOP senators are going to crack down on primaries to try to keep Tea Party forces out. So I wrote... primary elections are such a chore, so Senate Republicans say no more. They'll pick winners from their list, even if the Tea Party gets pissed.
Now, these you have to have the limited characters. This is almost like almost a form of haiku. Almost we have the limited syllables. And
yeah. I say Burma Shave.
Burma Shave. Oh yeah, the old Burma Shave signs. Your job as the Atwood chair, this is for a year, and what are the responsibilities there?
The Atwood chair is one of the really, I think, great things that university does. It's a visiting professor. They bring in a professional, and you teach a couple of classes. In the spring, I'll actually be taking students out on stories. They've had some just fabulous people over the years do it. It's just really a great and it's also one of the things is you get out statewide, so it's not just on campus, but you have a role across the great state of Alaska.
So how much traveling have you done in Alaska? We're talking huge state, a lot of open spaces.
For this particular gig, I haven't done a lot yet. It's probably going to be much more in the spring. But fortunately, as a reporter, I've covered a great deal of Alaska over the years, so I'm not unfamiliar with it.
Now, are you just here for the USD lecture? Or are you around... in the lower 48 for other reasons?
No, back this weekend.
Oh, back this weekend. Yeah. Now, do you still have a home in Idaho?
Yes.
So is that where your family is, or are they with you in Alaska?
Well, my wife's kind of going back and forth, and our boys are in college, so we're empty nesters.